When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a destination. We are finally here.
Let's go.
What is good? Welcome back to another episode of Destination Dynasty. I am your gracious host, Scott Connor. You can find me on X at CharlesChillFFB. Everything going on at Destination Devi, you can find it at DestinationDevi.com or join the Patreon, patreon.com/allguests. Subscribing to the website on the Destination 5 tier or the Patreon tiers, Heisman or Dynasty Trades in 5 will get you access to the Discord, along with options to purchase the tools and get access to the tools on the website. And the big bonus is you get extra content weekly in the Discord. We just dropped a 2-hour-long Discord special talking about interpreting war for your specific league, how to interpret the war graph along with the flex analytics, and really understanding what matters in your league. So if you're interested in roster construction and using the war tool, that will be a huge perk, and we'll continue to do that. Myself and Clay did one of these episodes, and we're going to do more of them, just going through different leagues, talking roster construction, talking how to navigate, and more importantly, how to fix existing dynasty rosters within that. And that's what today's episode is going to be about. We're going to be focusing on the flex position. Everyone that has tuned in to the roster construction series, both best ball and lineup, you can go back to those and listen, but I'm going to expand on some of the ideas that I think are very important to understand the why behind. Understanding the why when I say this is the type of position that I want to roster an excess on, or I want to establish a threshold, or what does replacement value mean? What does flex value mean when I say tight ends don't matter? You hear that a lot. What is that actually referring to? I will clarify that in this episode. But before we get to that, if you have not signed up for Underdog, you have a couple weeks left before the NFL draft. We will be doing a 15-hour plus live draft stream for all 3 days of the NFL draft. Myself, Ray, Jay Rich, the Trades in 5 crew, and everybody else at Destination Devi will be putting on a huge draft stream. It will be the place to be to get immediate dynasty analysis regarding the NFL draft. You can enter to win a ton of prizes, jerseys, cards, autographs, roster reviews, Heisman memberships, and much more on the draft stream. But you have to sign up for Underdog and do a $10 deposit using the code DDD, Destination Devi Draft. Again, DDD. If you do that, you will be entered into the drawing to win one of dozens of prizes that we have given away on the draft stream. So make sure you register. Friends, family, co-workers, significant others, anybody that is not subscribed to Underdog or is not signed up, sign up using DDD, do a deposit, and you'll be eligible to win all of those prizes on the draft stream. Now, as we dive into today's episode, one major thing that is a focus is when you run the war in a given league, and again, you can find the tool at destinationdevi.com, pull up the war machine, and you enter your sleeper username or you enter your MFL information along with the league ID, name, and password, and it will run the war. And the first tab you will get to is the 3-year average war. And it'll show you the nice, fancy war graph. I'm sure a lot of people have seen those posted. They've seen them posted in the Discord all the time if you are in there. But then that doesn't tell the whole story. You can't just look at the war graph and you can't just look at the colored lines and say, this matters and this doesn't matter. We did an entire series, Ray and I, that'll be dropping soon regarding war on a Underdog 1QB league. We're going to continue to do more of those on YouTube so that everybody can see them. More information to come on the war tool in terms of its availability for everybody. But you'll see these graphs posted all the time. And then you'll see commentary under them in the Discord when somebody says, here's the war graph for my league. and you'll see a bunch of commentary and analysis as to what to do based on just looking at that graph. But that doesn't tell the whole story. There's so much that can be gleaned inside that My League Analytics tab, which is essentially going through the replacement values and the flex values for your league. Now, it's going to differ based on the number of starters, the number of teams, the scoring for each position, the eligibility of, is it super flex or is it 2QB? That's a big deal. How many starters at each position? That also matters. Like, all of those things are going to differ when you plug in your league. And that's what we went over on that show. That's what we went over inside the Discord when Clay and I went over a bunch of league formats. But we're going to go back, and if you want to follow along and you have the WAR tool, plug in my username, CharlesChillFFB, and you will pull up the roster construction series. So that is the exact format that I went over doing the roster construction series, both best ball and lineup, talking about how I would roster construct in both. But this is going to dive a little bit deeper. This is going to dive into looking at those flex positions, looking at the replacement value, and just looking at what it looked like in 2023 so you really understand the why behind building in a certain way. And again, this is a 12-team, start 11, 30-man rosters, and it is 1.75 tight end premium. It is start 3 wide receivers, 2 running backs, a quarterback, a tight end, a super flex, and 3 flexes. So pretty standard across a league when you said a 12-team super flex start 11. The only change is the 1.75 tight end premium. And you'll see why I did that. It's for a specific reason, because if you look at the flex values, and that is the first thing to start at, is looking at the optimal league-wide super flex starters and flex starters. You'll go down, click on My League Analytics, and you'll look at those numbers. And it's very simple with the super flex starters. You will see that the optimal number of QBs in a super flex spot is 12. That is pretty standard in most leagues. If you see a number below 12, it means that the QB scoring relative to the other positions might be a little depressed. But more often than not, that number is going to be 12. And it just represents that in an optimal week, you're going to want to start a quarterback in the super flex. And in this case, every single week, you're going to want to have a quarterback in the super flex, even if that is a replacement value QB relative to its peers at the other positions. You're going to want to have a quarterback in that super flex spot. So that first takeaway right there, we're just speaking to the roster construction series. That first takeaway speaks to why you would want to roster all the backup QBs in a lineup league. Why you would prioritize the backup QBs, because even at the replacement value range, where you would be plugging a player that is a quarterback below replacement in that super flex spot, you're better off doing that than you are putting your next best receiver, running back, or tight end into that position. Now, people will ask, does that mean that you never start one of those players over a quarterback? Well, obviously, this is a week-to-week game. Dynasty is played in a week-to-week game. So if the assumption is that your best option on the bench is a replacement level QB or below, or a replacement level at the other positions, then obviously you're going to choose the QB. Now the question might be, okay, do I start Breece Hall in my super flex spot if I don't have a second quarterback? Well, of course, the option there would be, sure, you would start a really good skill player in your quarterback spot or in your super flex spot. But the odds are, have you gotten to the super flex spot before you've filled all the other spots? So if you're telling me you're putting a player the quality of Breece Hall in your super flex spot, you've now filled your RB1, your RB2, and presumably a bunch of flexes with guys better than that. And that's just unlikely. So usually that is not what's being compared to the other when you're talking replacement value QB. So hopefully that makes sense and why in an optimal league, you would want to roster as many backup QBs as possible, because A, there's only 32 NFL teams. B, there's going to be teams that are on bye weeks half the season. And C, if you think about the quarterbacks that are getting starts in a given year, sure, it's not going to be perfect to where, let's say there's 65 quarterbacks that start. There's going to be some teams like Minnesota last year, they start 4 different guys. There's going to be other teams where the backup never starts. But if you just use that concept as, I think there's going to be approximately, let's say, 64 QBs that start a game during the season, you can measure that when you're looking at roster construction in the offseason. That's about a starter and a backup for every team. So if you take that number and you're able to get your roster to the optimal, which if you go back to the roster construction series was 12 quarterbacks. And again, we haven't talked to where you want those quarterbacks to come from. That's not going to be what this show is going to be about. But if you just think about that number, if you're rostering 12, you're now leaving only 52 for the rest of the league. Now, a lot of those 52 are probably going to be guys that are locked in starters that start more than half the games. A majority of them are also going to be backups where maybe somebody else gets lucky and finds a starter. But the idea being you are creating a little more scarcity at the most dominant position, which the analytics say the super flex spot for quarterbacks is the most dominant position in this scoring. So that's why you're leaning into the 12 backup quarterbacks. Now, what that allows you to do with your roster construction is a little different, right? That allows you maybe to go a little slimmer if you have an elite QB. One strategy that I've been imploring is if I can get to that 12 and I'm able to mix in maybe some backups that have some higher upside, I'm able to get a guy like Justin Fields, a guy like Sam Howell. Maybe I have a Sam Darnold, Jacoby Brissett, Jarrett Stidham, someone like that where I think there's a good chance they could start. Gardner Minshew is another one that fits that criteria. If I have one or two of those guys, I'm not sure they're starters. I'm not sure they're starters for half a season. But I have probably some weeks I can plug in where I know I'm going to have a second starter, which leans into I always want to have a second QB, and that's Superflex. So if I have one of the elite QBs, say I have Josh Allen, say I have Jalen Hurts, and I know they're probably going to be in the top five or better in scoring, I'm buying a little production or war from that position that I'm almost kind of borrowing from my second QB spot, where I don't need to roster somebody that has significant market value. But then I look and I go, all right, I'm holding Kirk Cousins or Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield or Deshaun Watson. Like, those guys have some dynasty value. Yet when I'm looking at, all I need is to find replacement value or better production from that QB2 spot or from my bench, maybe I'll just gamble and I'll trade that value off of my team. So I'm just kind of going through the theory as to how you could roster construct. If you have two pretty good quarterbacks, you have Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy. All right, those guys are probably going to start the majority of the games. If I have the 10 backups behind them, guess what I can do? I probably don't need a third starter. If I also have Geno Smith on that team, there's a good chance I can move Geno Smith because he may be valued a little bit higher than the backup that is the same as Geno Smith when he starts, but he's just not starting from week one. So there may be some value you can liquidate from that range and just make sure you backfill with the backup quarterbacks. And the beauty of this strategy is if you have some stability at the position, maybe you have one elite guy, or you have two pretty good quarterbacks that are going to kind of last from year to year, you can turn over the backup QB rooms very efficiently, very easily. People drop these QBs. People drop the QBs after the season. People drop the QBs when they go to make rookie picks. People honestly drop the QBs because they want to stash the latest, greatest training camp buzz player. And you just easily pick up this backup. Now, are you going to roster the best backups off waivers? No, they're going to be held. But the marginal backups, the Mitch Trubisky's, ah, man, that guy's a cut. Reality is he's a backup again. Drew Lock, seen him got cut many, many times this year. Reality is he may start some games, but he's definitely a backup. So you get the picture. It allows you to turn it over at what right now is the cheapest advantage in Dynasty if you're in one of these leagues. It's not the any running back on a 53. A lot of people have become wise to that. It's a lot harder to find those running backs on waivers because people have picked them clean. Efficiency at receiver, which I want to talk about a little bit later in the show. Receivers are the dominant currency. There's still a lot of inefficiency in terms of what people are rostering, but there's a lot of efficiency in terms of people being able to spot receivers that are productive, draft receivers that are productive, and they're also not a scarce asset. So as more people start to realize that and it becomes more of an abundance thing, people start to dial in and go, you know what? I don't need this wide receiver 10 on my bench. Maybe they'll pick them up later on in the year if they do need them. But largely, you're seeing people be more efficient when it comes to receivers and running backs. So the one advantage I think that exists right now is quarterbacks. So we'll talk a little bit about the other positions. So after we get past the super flex part, you go down to the optimal league-wide flex starters. And what that's saying is that when you get to the flexes, so outside of your core required starters, this is the distribution of where these flexes are coming from. So that number, if you go to the bottom, optimal league-wide flex starters, that'll typically add up to 36. And in this case, that makes sense because there's three flexes. If there was two flexes, that would add up to 24. If there was four flexes, it would add up to 48. But here it's showing you, out of 36, that optimally nine running backs out of 36 get flexed, 15 receivers out of 36 get flexed, and 12 tight ends out of 36 get flexed. And remember, this is the number that will generally hit that flex. And you can look at it like a percentage as well. 9 out of 36 running backs, 25% of the time you'll see running backs in the flexes. That is after the core 24 running backs are in the running back starter spots because everybody has to start too. So you could count that threshold as being the startable threshold for 2023 was 33 running backs per week. Receivers, same thing. You have three receivers per team. That's 36, and then 15 more in the flexes. So the threshold for last year to be a starter was 51 receivers. Tight ends, same thing. 12 starters across the league, and then 12 more in the flexes. So the threshold for tight ends was 24. So you can kind of look at that to tell me what is the dominant position in the flex. Now, the more core starters you require, the more erosion there is going to be from the flexes. Meaning if you ever look at a league where there is only a start one requirement at each position, what are you likely to see? Way more receivers in those flexes because a lot of the receivers spill over into the flex. So if you just visualize that, this tells me the dominant position in this format in the flexes is the wide receiver. And that includes the fact that you start more receivers than the other positions. If it's a start two receiver league, you're going to see that percentage go up a little higher. And that makes total sense. But just visualizing it, you can quickly look at the WAR and say, this is the dominant position in my league. So the second point, why do you think I established the quote unquote wide receiver threshold? That's because it is the dominant position in terms of the flexes. So there is a reason that in a lineup league, the core focus is the wide receivers within the threshold and then the backup quarterbacks as backups on your roster. So when you look at that, you go, all right, the wide receivers are the dominant position, not the dominant currency. Forget about dynasty value. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the dominant position in the flex based on this format. It makes sense to establish that threshold as everybody has to start three, so that's 36, and then 15 more in the flex. Now, that's just a general ballpark, but if you just say that's wide receiver 50 or better, of course, that's going to be the core of my roster. That is going to be the core of where I want to have plenty of options every given week. Now, this is a weekly game. This is not a season-long game. So even though I'm looking at season-long data, we should be looking at this on a week-to-week basis. So when I go through my roster construction and say, okay, every week I can start six receivers, three starters, three flexes. How do I construct so that from week one to week 17, I have enough to try to hit that number of six every week with this threshold? And hence why in the roster construction series, I picked a number of eight or nine receivers, and you can lean into nine because receivers are so valuable. Worst case scenario, you have an extra good receiver on your team and they act as an extra draft pick or an extra piece of currency that can be traded for higher than what another position can be traded for. So let's just call it nine for purposes of this. I'm 50% above what I could need every single week. That allows me for some attrition if I have an injury, if I have a bye week. But ideally, almost every week, I have six top 50 receivers to throw in to my lineup. And they're just sit and forget. And we'll go over some data as to why that is so powerful and why it makes the most sense to play it that way. The data says it, but visualizing it in terms of what actually wins weeks, why it makes most sense. We'll get back to that here in a little bit. I want to talk about 2023 data and why that's backed up with the distribution of spike weeks from last year. So you see that the core of my team is going to be wide receivers. Now, can you hit that in a startup? It's going to be difficult. In Dynasty, Dynasty is not just points per game for the upcoming week or the upcoming year. There is a little ambiguity in terms of, all right, a player from a Dynasty perspective is only valued at here, but his production is higher. Or there's a player that is valued higher, but the production maybe as a rookie isn't going to be as high. You have to use a little intuition there. When I say nine top 50 receivers, I don't mean I need nine receivers that are going to finish in the top 50 in points per game. What I mean is nine assets that fit that description, and that's not going to be that hard to do, only because there's going to be some players that aren't valued that high that fit that criteria for a season, and then there's going to be some players that maybe by default, you can just get them with, say, a rookie pick, and it's wide receiver 46. Let's just say A.D. Mitchell goes in the early second. He's wide receiver 46. Now, you may look at his landing spot and say, I don't know if he's going to finish as a top 50 receiver this year, but asset-wise, he is. So you have to use a little imagination or intuition there to say, I'm just going to cast a net and say I need nine top 50 receivers. Some can be based on value. Some can be based on production only. But the majority of players are going to fit both. You're not valued as a top 50 receiver unless you produce there. And most likely, the teams or hat receivers that produce inside the top 50 are likely going to be close to valued, if not valued, in the top 50. So they correlate. They go together. You're not going to see many players, oh, that guy's wide receiver 44 in the season, but he has no dynasty value. Even if it's a lower-end player, he's probably wide receiver 60, 65. So it's close enough to use your imagination and say, okay, if I can achieve that, here's what I've done. Here's the benefit. Not only is it the dominant currency on the current dynasty market, not only is it the dominant player to play in the flex based on these settings, but what it also does, and this is the biggest key, the same as with the quarterbacks. If I can pull this off, if I have nine of the top 50 receivers, and maybe there's some leeway where that expands out by 10 to 15, I have now created some scarcity at a position where it doesn't exist. Now, does that mean I'm going to hoard every receiver so nobody else can get them? No, that's impossible. There's too many. But it's going to have a cascade effect where, let's say I even expand it to 65. So I take 65 and I have nine. That leaves 56 for the other 11 teams. So do the math. You're right around five per team, right? So everybody else is going to have five of these receivers that I'm trying to pull from. However, they're not going to have nine. So they're still a little deficient. So most likely what people are going to do is they're going to look at their team and go, man, I'm a little weak at receiver. I don't have enough. I have a couple good ones, and then maybe I'm holding a fringe veteran here, but I don't have enough. So you're going to actually force your opponent into some inefficiency. Maybe they draft a couple roster cloggers. Maybe they pick up some receivers off waivers. And you wonder, wow, why would they pick up Paris Campbell or Devontae Parker? Why are they rostering Calvin Austin? Insert whatever name. Now, does that mean they can't find diamond in the rough and hit on a receiver that has a top 50 season that they pulled from waivers? Of course not. But you want that practice to be employed by everybody else in your league. You're going to look at almost every roster. You're going to go, okay, roster clogger, roster clogger, roster clogger. I could go through a couple of my teams where I see examples of this. I mean, I go through and look, and actually I'll pull up a league right now. It's a little higher tight end premium, but it's a league where I have pretty much roster constructed as perfectly as possible. I am carrying eight receivers, and because it's two PPR, I can go a little heavier at tight end. I have three tight ends, so I'm basically set in terms of the dominant flexes. So I have 11 combined receivers and tight ends in a two PPR. So I go through the other 11 teams. You know, I've fit that criteria exactly as I want. I'll just look through three teams at random and pull their receiver rooms. Here's one. David Bell, Marquez Callaway, Devin Duvernay, Kyle Phillips, Kadarius Toney, Quez Watkins, Rondale Moore, Tyler Boyd, Calvin Austin. That's a team that has nine of those receivers rostered. What's the point? Here's another one. Cedric Tillman, Michael Thomas, Hunter Renfrow, Scotty Miller, Alan Lazard, Greg Dortch. There's a team that has six of those guys rostered. And then one more. Olamide Zaccheaus, Tyler Scott, Khalif Raymond, Marvin Jones, Deontay Hardy, Danny Gray, Braxton Berrios, Dwayne Eskridge. This is a lineup league. These are the receiver rooms of some other teams. Let's keep going. Jake Bobo, Nelson Aguilar, Mecole Hardman, Julio Jones, Curtis Samuel. That's one that probably has gained a little value. Michael Wilson, right on the fringe, right? Probably a guy that is right on the fringe. You could justify a roster spot, but not when you're rostering those others. Robert Woods, woof. So I could go through and continue teams. Here's one more just for fun. Ronnie Bell, Ashton Doolin, Isaiah McKenzie, Tim Patrick, Justin Ross, Trent Sherfield, MVS, Parker Washington, roster clogger. Idea is I look up and down the roster. And again, I've roster constructed almost perfectly in this league to where it's pretty much dialed in exactly as I want. Right now, I'm rostering 11 quarterbacks, 11 receivers and tight ends, and every other position is a running back. But the spillover effect of what is going on with the other teams, because I have dialed in my roster construction, is massive. And this is only magnified if you have another person in your league that's constructing this way. Maybe you have two or three people that are generally following this formula. Maybe they're not as tight as you, but if they're close, the cascade effect of two or even three people trying to achieve this optimal construction or optimal build, it is going to push the other nine so far out of their construction. They're going to be so suboptimal. You're going to have roster clogger city everywhere. You're going to have people carrying receivers that aren't on rosters. You're going to have people that are desperate and they're carrying tons of tight ends that have zero value, zero chance of ever being a lineup. They're not going to have quarterback covered, right? Because if three teams are carrying 10 plus QBs, what the hell are the other nine teams going to do? They're probably going, man, there's no QBs to roster. So what should I go pick up? Oh, yeah, some receivers. How about some tight ends? So there's power in doing this. Now, what happens in the future when everybody does it? We'll see. That's a question that I always ask myself is as this stuff becomes more adoptable and more efficient, especially across leagues where you know six or seven people are using the same strategy, what's the pivot? I don't know. That's a question I'm still trying to solve. But back to the optimal league-wide flex starters. As you can see in this format, 1.75, the tight ends actually are a little bit more of a dominant flex than the running backs. Now, doesn't mean there's more good tight ends based on 1.75. What it does mean is after the running backs are locked into the two RB spots and after the tight ends are locked into the one tight end spot, tight ends are in the flexes more so than running backs. So if you're looking at your construction, again, this is one where you probably have to measure out the tight end threshold a little bit more carefully. If you take the 12 starters across the league and then you take the 12 in the flex spot, you're right around 24. So again, like I was saying in that league where I'm constructed perfectly, if you have tight end 15, tight end 17, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about this later where it can be a little bit of a misnomer and why in a 1.75, there's a big difference between a start 10 and a start 11. Because the cheat sheet is that a lot of the tight ends that are making up these flexes are existing in that last flex spot. If you make it a start 10, the 1.75 premium doesn't really matter. But if you expand it to 11 or even 12 starters, you start to see the tight ends hit the flexes more just because the premium is a little bit higher than typical. But the idea here is really just look at your tight end room and say, okay, I don't really want to carry more than two, probably max three. But I had decided on two only because I don't want to spend the resources to get what's likely the tight end 18. Tight end 19. You go right now, what is that on Keep Trade Cut? Dallas Goedert. Good player. Nice to have as my second tight end. But I probably don't want to pay the price to have a third Dallas Goedert, given just how easy it is and a little bit safer based on the market to hold a receiver in that spot. But if you do find yourself with a team like that example I was giving, I have Kyle Pitts, I have Evan Engram, and I have Dallas Goedert. So Dallas Goedert is technically my tight end three, who I would consider moving, but because he's within that flex threshold, I'm fine keeping him. He's a flex. I'm fine having him in the flex. I'm within the construction, even though I'm carrying three tight ends, I'm at least looking at those three saying they are above that flex line. So if you have that, you can almost say, all right, I can use one less receiver, but it doesn't change any of the other numbers. So here it's almost like I take my number of threshold receivers and I add the number of top 24-ish or better tight ends that I can get, and you combine the two. So if the optimal number at receiver is 9 and the optimal number at tight end is 2, you can probably get away with a combination of the two being around 11. So it's right back to those numbers that we talked about. Understanding those thresholds and just understanding where you want to pull these players from. Use your imagination. You may not agree that this tight end is top 24. You may not agree that this tight end fits that description. Then fine. But you can also see how risky it is to go, I'm just going to stash a tight end. Man, I'm in a 1.75 tight end premium. Let me just hold Josh Wiley and Lucas Kroll and Elijah Higgins. I'll hold all three. But then you look at these numbers and you go, man, inside the top 24, that's a pretty stringent threshold. It's going to take a lot for one of those players I named, even if they end up with a moderate role, it's going to take a lot for them to hit that range. So probably not a great bet for a roster spot. That's how you decipher these numbers when you look at these flex wide thresholds. And then you go back to the last position, which is running back. And running back, although you may say it's the least important based on this, I think there's a bigger focus now on, I've already executed these numbers, 12 QBs, 8 receivers, 2 tight ends. We'll just use that because that's the numbers I used on the roster construction series. That only leaves me 8 running back spots. So no longer can I just look at any running back on a 53 and treat them all the same. I probably have to pay a little more attention to how I'm actually building my running back room. What is in my running back room? If you shrink the number of roster spots down, let's say it's 28-man rosters instead of 30. Unfortunately, the data that I gave away, it doesn't really change for the other positions. I don't want less receivers because I have less roster spots, because that's where my concentration and core is coming from. The starters didn't change. Still 11 starters, but it's only 28 roster spots. So where am I going to pull from? I'm probably going to pull from the running backs. Maybe one less backup QB, but the idea being I'm going to have to probably sacrifice one or two running back bodies, which makes me value running backs a little differently in terms of I want to definitely have a layered approach where hopefully I have an anchor. Hopefully I have at least two other running backs that I know are going to get some sort of volume. And then I have the best 4 or 5 any running backs on a 53 that I can get. Now, if I'm weak, maybe you expand that by a spot or two in place of a quarterback until you see what happens going into the season. But if you're a little bit stronger at running back, you really want to dial in what those layers look like and always give yourself one or two spots as a buffer at running back. So think twice before you give away a running back like a Jaylen Warren or a Tajay Spears. You may say, oh, I need to upgrade. But no, those guys are perfect as your RB2, RB3. And then maybe a couple players below that that don't have as good of a role or aren't on as good of an offense or they're not as efficient. But the idea is you want to pay more attention to layering your running back room. And this is one of the biggest changes that I've made over the last year is the numbers at running back don't have to be as high. And the reason is because they're harder to achieve. So I don't want to fight at a lower tier because more people are stashing any running back on a 53. I want to maybe create a little bit more of a focus on finding quality at the running back position. And given that I'm going to probably treat the running back position like it is all a one-year bet, I really don't care if I'm holding a little ADV. I'm holding a Rashad White. I'm holding an older running back that has some value. I have essentially built around the fact that my running backs are replaceable and can turn over every season. Now, sure, can I get lucky and hold a running back that gives me 3 years? Great. Maybe I get an extra year out of a veteran. All of that is gravy. I'm building my team around the fact that my construction can essentially sustain a running back room that needs to be turned over every year, which makes you think a little more, man, what is an anchor? Bijan Robinson, whether he actually smashes or not, he still is an anchor that will provide some stability at the top of your running back room, where before it would have just been any running back on a 53. I can roster 14, 15, 16 running backs. Doesn't matter. So I don't need to value all the high-end ones that much. But here, if you get some extra years out of a running back that you have, it can be very valuable. And given what the war graph says, and given the distribution of how much more valuable one of the elite running backs is over the everybody else's, this is where it maybe makes sense to really focus some resources on getting one of those high-end running backs if you can. Easier said than done, but if you can get your hands on one, the value actually will pay you back higher than it is if you're really indifferent on the receivers that you have that make up your thresholds. And this is where I disagree with some other analysts that we'll talk about. I don't need elite receivers to win. You know what I need? Volume. Innings eaters. Strength in numbers. I don't need a 22-point per game receiver on my team to win. What I can win with is a bunch of 15, 16, 17-point per game receivers. Those are the ones, and I'll talk about that in the second part of the show, those are the ones that are providing the random spike weeks. Are they as good as CeeDee Lamb or Amon-Ra St. Brown or Tyreek Hill? No. But they're giving me enough that if I have six of them going every week, I am going to have a week or two where I run into a random George Pickens 38-point week, a T. Higgins 34-point week. Brandon Ayuk goes for 26. DK Metcalf goes for 34. That's not going to happen as frequently, but that's the difference between those guys and the elite guys. With the elite guys, it happens more consistently and more frequently. But the power is if I have a nice blend of nine of those receivers and I'm cycling them in and never missing a week, odds are I'm going to match the production that you have that invested in Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Especially if you've basically surrounded those two with scrubs. You're basically making the opposite bet that I would be making at running back. You're going, okay, I have Jefferson and Chase. I know they're going to score 19, 20 points per game. They're going to have tons of weeks where they're at 25, 30 points per game, which is true. But now I'm scrounging. I'm trying to find the random Josh Palmer, KJ Osborne type to just try to get me 11, 12. And a lot of times that can work. That can absolutely work. And a lot of times those production points are not expensive. But what befuddles the person that built like that? Their roster construction. They're not constructing right. They're still not dialed in at receiver. They're wasting spots. So just understand, if you're going to build differently and it can work, you can beat my optimal strategy by building differently. But you have to be cognizant. It's a teeter-totter. It's a push and pull. Wherever you're getting your huge distribution of points from, you have to make sure you're constructed around that advantage. So thinking about that, I want to get some feedback from people, especially if you're in the Discord, what questions you have on this. This is based on the roster construction series. I'm going to come back and just end the show with some basic numbers to illustrate the why behind some of this. Hopefully I went through and explained how this makes sense, why I roster construct the way that I did. And it helps people that are using the war tool to really interpret in their league, you know, how to go through position by position, how to analyze the quarterbacks and the super flexes, and then how to analyze the other skill players in the flexes. And the last thing I wanted to clarify is when you look at the replacement level points per game, I haven't talked about that tab yet, but you'll see at the top, the replacement value or level points per game for each position. What that means is that when those players go into the flex, so in the flex, what is a receiver typically scoring? Or what is a running back typically scoring? Or what is a tight end typically scoring? And you'll just see what that number is. Now, that doesn't impact the distribution per se, but it just impacts what they're typically scoring when they're in that spot. So I just wanted to highlight that because a lot of people look at that replacement running back points per game and they will say, ooh, I only need 8.3 points to replace my running back. No, those are going to be below your two RB spots and below once they hit the flexes. What's the regular or average score that that position is contributing to the flex? So it really doesn't mean a whole lot to me. The biggest thing I use from that tab is comparing the QB scoring versus the super flex. The other positions, it doesn't matter as much to look at that. whereas the flex wide distribution means a lot more. But just wanted to clarify that because that's a question that I've gotten a couple times because people look at replacement running back. What does it take to replace my running back? It's only 8.3 points per game. Now, that's not correct. We're talking about replacing your running backs in the flex, meaning where would they hit or what would the production be from a running back once they get to replacement value after the flexes are full. And you already see what the flexes are full based on the optimal league-wide flex starters at the bottom. And looking more at this, we're already 40 minutes into the stream, and I'm going to go ahead and push the data that I found to a future episode, only because I think if I went through all of this, it's only going to confuse from the main message that I had put out in the first part of the show. So apologize anybody that waited back for the second part going through a lot of the 2023 data, but I think it takes away from what I went over in terms of using the WAR tool, using the My League analytics to actually compare these players in your league. Harken back to the roster construction series. Obviously, some of the data is going to impact how you're going to roster construct in best ball versus lineup. You know, there's a reason that, again, regardless of best ball or lineup, the receivers are going to be dominant in the flexes. But obviously, it changes in terms of how you deploy running backs and quarterbacks. Hence why you don't want to roster a lot of the backups in a best ball league because the opportunity cost that exists of holding those zeros on your bench in a given week. So think about that more. I implore everybody to go to the WAR tool, sign up at destinationdevy.com or patreon.com/allgas. Find an option where you can get access to the tools. Even for a month, try it out. Jump in the Discord and join us for the AMAs or the Q&A sessions going through WAR. Because there's a ton of different ones that we looked at. They're not all going to be the roster construction series. This is a cookie cutter 12 team start 11, 1.75 tight end premium. But we're going to get some that are 10 teams start 10, 14 teams start 9. Like, they're all different. But it's the understanding, the why and the how behind it. Tune in to the series that Ray and I did, our rebooted version of War Games, where we literally went over underdog roster construction for 3 hours. We're going to be dropping another episode where we're going over Superflex roster construction for that probably just as long a time. And then we're going to go through a couple more complex leagues just like this to analyze how we would break them down and why this stuff matters. There's a lot of people out there that say, WAR doesn't matter. Roster construction doesn't matter. And as you can see, but going through these examples, it does matter. It matters from a perspective of you are creating inefficiencies in the market for everybody else in your league. And we haven't talked about players. I don't think I really mentioned any players in this league other than just examples, hypotheticals. So the player part is irrelevant. I'm not the person that's going to be the one to tell you what players to pick. But I can't understate how important it is to understand the why of where these players fit in. And then it's on you to go, okay, I understand the parameters. Let me go pick the players for my roster. And the power of being able to do it over multiple teams is extremely beneficial. So hopefully that helps everybody. Again, if you have any questions, leave a comment, hit me up in the Discord if you're there. This is what I love talking about most in Dynasty. This is the entire world of Dynasty that I enjoy just diving into for hours at a time. So more to come in the Discord, patreon.com/allgas and destinationdevy.com to sign up and get access. And once you're in there, there'll be a ton more to learn and a ton more to go over with this. So with that, I will go ahead and sign off for the week. Be chill.